This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's an exciting time to be doing this week because there's so many moving parts, so many moving pieces, not just in America, but around the country, around the world. Jason Riley's got to be with us from The Wall Street Journal. His latest column on how Eric Adams dropping out of the mayor's race, which has national implications because it could set the tone for the Democratic Party for the midterms, with a socialist leading by 25 points in the biggest city in the country, one of the most famous, if not the most famous in the world. We'll talk to Jason Riley about that. And standing by is Senator Roger Marshall, also a doctor, because we're talking a lot about health care. He's going to be a dual-use guest. We'll find out what's happening, so let's get to the big three.
Number three. He's attacking you as a communist, are you?
No, I'm a democratic socialist. That means I believe in dignity for all people.
It means more than that.
Yeah, I think...
You're not a communist. I agree with that.
I don't. Wake up, New York City. Your front-running mayor is letting you know what a disaster he will be for schools, crime, and the economy. We review the latest revelations from the 33-year-old anti-Semitic communist.
Number two.
This is not about safety. This is not about immigration. This is about fomenting chaos and terrorizing the people of Chicago and cities across America.
Mayor Brandon Johnson, not about safety. The crime crackdown in blue cities from Portland to Chicago. The heat is coming with one simple goal, safety for the people. Dems just don't see it that way. Hopefully, the people of those cities do.
Number one.
They switched all their positions for political expediency, and now they're making the American people pay for that. It's wrong and it's shameless.
How long does this go on?
I hope it's a short one because real people are suffering because of it.
Yep. How about 700 plus thousand who are going to be furloughed or fired? Shut down in D.C. Dems feeling the pain as Trump, Thune, and Johnson amp up the pressure as they have acquired almost all the leverage. We'll break it down. With us right now is Senator Marshall. Senator, I know the Jewish holidays today, so not much is going on. Tomorrow there could be a vote. Do you sense, I know there's three Democrats who've come to your side, and you lost Rand Paul because he's on his own planet. But do you sense there could be five more Democrats who take the rug out from underneath Schumer?
Well, Brian, good morning, and not yet. This is day number two of the Schumer shutdown. This is a political shutdown. This issue on the COVID subsidies is all a smokescreen. I really think we should ask AOC when she's going to cry uncle. Did you see Nancy Pelosi respond yesterday? That how she bristled her neck.
In fact, Senator, for our listeners, let's hear it. So I know what you're referring to. So let's hear it. Cut eight.
There was a thought from the Republicans that AOC is directing this, and she said that senators are welcome to go to her office directly. Is she?
Why are you saying such a ridiculous thing? Why are you saying?
She said go to her office directly. Do you think there's any?
She is not directing this. She's wonderful. She's a real a team player and the rest of that. You started by saying Republicans saying that she's directing this. She is not. Hakeem Jeffries is. She's an articulate spokesperson for her point of view.
But by the way, This is what Nancy Pelosi is yelling at the reporter, which is nice. But here's what AOC said. Cut seven.
I saw some Republican members of Congress saying, oh, well, if we have this shutdown, it's because of AOC. Well, if that's the case, my office is open and you are free to walk in and negotiate with me directly.
So are you, Senator? Are you going to take her up on that? Or should Nancy Pelosi get an education of what AOC actually said?
Well, Brian, maybe you and I could go over an interview or sit down and host her for a round table, you and me, and have that discussion as well. But I think that, you know, you're a journalist. You read body language. I'm a physician. I read body language. I've never seen Nancy Pelosi bristle like that. I mean, they hit a nerve. This is absolutely Chuck Schumer responding, just like New York City trying to figure out what to do with their potential communist mayor. The rest of the Democrat Party is trying to figure out what to do with AOC. If there was a primary tomorrow in New York, I think that she beat Schumer running away. So this is Chuck Schumer getting down on his knee, bending his knee to the far, far left radical liberal party that they have become right now. So this is all political. I don't think there's any way we bridge that gap this weekend. I think next week when the Democrats wake up and there's another 100,000 people that have been permanently fired from the federal government, shrinking this government back. And Brian, I want to give you some facts. I know that you actually want someone to back up their facts. When Joe Biden became president, there was about 2.8 million federal employees. When President Trump took over, there was over 3 million. President Trump has shrunk us about half the way back. We're not even back to pre-Biden numbers, to pre-COVID numbers in the federal government. So we got a lot of work to be done to shrink the size of the federal government.
So I remember in March, Schumer said, I don't want a shutdown because it'll allow Musk and Trump more leeway to drastically cut programs. And he told Dems we have to fund the government. Now here we are in September. Does he think that because Musk is gone, they're not going to cut? Russ Vogt is actually doing it more methodically with more experience. He's been studying it. And he already froze $18 billion that are going to New York infrastructure. Obviously a message to Hakeem Jeffries and Senator Schumer. Do you worry about looking callous? Because these jobs are filled with people, right, that have families. Do you worry about that perception?
I don't think I worry about it, Brian, but it's, you know, it's part of the political calculation. I think we should measure twice and cut once. I think that the big picture Republicans back home understand that we're going to take in $5 trillion and spend $7 trillion this year. They understand that regulation is probably the one of the biggest holders breaks on the economy as well. They realize that there was less federal employees, that there'd be less regulatory process, hopefully, to jump through as well. So I think it's part of the calculus. The economy trumps this by 1,000. And no, we don't want to be callous. We do not. Mm. What we do want to see, though, is helping these people move from government jobs back to the private sector and growing the economy rather than throttling it down.
So this is within the Washington Post today. And they basically said Democrats just marched into a shutdown trap. And they say left-wing Democrats, like the Freedom Caucus before them on the Republican side, enter this shutdown in a position of weakness. President Trump and his budget director, Russ Vogt, now have extraordinary authority to choose which agencies to close, which spending to prioritize, even which government workers to lay off. And they're wondering what they were thinking. He said a partial shutdown of the federal government began at midnight. Democrats have insisted any agreement to prevent a government shutdown must extend tax credits for the Affordable Care Act beyond this year. But they don't have any leverage to do it. They all wish they could have a different program, but they lost the majority. The big, beautiful bill passed. And those cuts are to the pandemic level of supplemental spending, as well as making sure that eligible, the right people are getting Medicaid and not healthy people who are just sponging off the system.
Right. Yeah, Brian, let's take a quick dive down on these COVID subsidies, if you don't mind. Number one is we should fund the government and get it open. That's a separate conversation than these COVID subsidies because it's so complicated. I've been looking at this now for several months, knowing that December 31st is the deadline. I'm willing to sit down with anyone, anywhere, any place, and discuss them. The first thing we have to address is the fraud. So these subsidies have grown under the ACA from $50 billion to $150 billion a year. we think that maybe $50 billion of fraud, waste, and abuse is sitting there. I'm not making that number up. If we had time, I could go into a lot of detail, but there's a huge amount of fraud, waste, and abuse there. And then behind the scenes, behind the curtains, insurance premiums are going to go up 20% this year. Brian, that's what I want to work on. I want to work on bringing down the price of health care. So regardless of what happens with these subsidies, the policies are going to go up 20%. And the worst case scenario for Democrats is the government's only paying 80% rather than 90% of the premium, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And would happy, you know, to talk about what we'd like to do as Republicans to drive down the cost of health care, but just want to drive this home. $50 billion of fraud, and the cost of health care insurance premiums are going to go up 20% regardless of what happens here in the next month or three.
So that's what Democrats are counting on. Because at the end, you know, setting up for the year, they say, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, here's your new premiums. And the Democrats are going to say, that's because Republicans cut your program so rich people can get richer.
Yeah, and that's I think I'm just so frustrated. And of course, that's going to be their this is their number one issue that they're going to try to run on next year is health care. And I think that Republicans need to lean into it with solutions. What President Trump did yesterday with Trump RX is a step in the right direction on the price of prescription drugs. We have legislation called our price tags bills where we would force hospitals, imaging centers, surgery centers to post their prices. And when your doctor says you need your knee replaced, you could look at all the hospitals in your area, look at the prices, look at their outcomes, and then you make a decision because you're going to have to use your HSA dollars to pay your out-of-pocket, that type of thing. We need to expand HSAs as well. So there's things that we can do to start driving the cost of health care down. So between now and when the people go to the polling booth next November, Republicans can show results. But look, this 20% rise in insurance premiums is on the back of the ACA. It's on the back of these subsidies that the federal government has given so much subsidies to insurance companies. You talk about corporate welfare, $150 billion a year of corporate welfare. The more we give the subsidy, the more they raise everybody's insurance policies.
So you know, that's what you need, people to study this. It's not something that can be a cartoon or a couple of lines. So we find out where the weakness in the system is, find out how to fix it, and understand everybody wants everyone to have great health care, top quality health care at affordable prices. Nobody wants to get anyone bankrupt. But the Obamacare system is not working. And to fix it, they keep throwing more money at it. And if you take the money away, that means you don't like poor people. And that's the cycle that you need people to stand back and approach this intellectually. And someone like you, who's a doctor that studies the insurance side of it necessarily and now is a politician, to come forward with the definition. And hopefully behind closed doors, there'll be serious people on the other side to try to work this out a year out of the midterms. But lastly, the whole problem of giving illegals all these accommodations, including health care, has never been a problem before until recently. I want to bring you back to the 1990s. Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer, believe it or not, they've both been around since the 90s. Listen to them talk about illegal immigration and health care.
We do not want to do anything to encourage more illegal immigration into this country. We know now that too many people come in for medical care as it is. We certainly don't want them having the same benefits that American citizens are entitled to have.
People say, well, why can't you stop illegal immigrants or others from coming here? And the number one answer we give our constituents is when they come here, they can get jobs, get benefits against the law because of fraud.
That was his worry in the 90s. Does he think it went away now? And why did they change their perspective?
Yeah, Brian, so that's politics, right? So they're responding to their far left base. They have changed their beliefs. You know, every morning, Brian, I don't mean to be corny, but I wake up and pray that I would do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly. And that do justice part is what we're talking about right here. What's the right thing to do? Probably 2 million people, 2 million illegal immigrants have been getting free health care or subsidized health care from the federal government. I mean, that's what the CBO said. Two million illegal immigrants each year get free health care subsidies from the federal government. And our One Big Beautiful Bill made a pretty good firm attack on that, forcing people to figure out, you know, to figure out who these people really are, where they're working, those types of things. And the part of what the Democrats want to open government up again is to do away with that. But I think that this is, I mean, gosh, I'm not the politician, but something of convenience. So they switch their stance on this because that's what's convenient right now in their political party. Don't you think this is just about them moving what – and I'm trying to do what's right here. Look, I want everybody to have meaningful, affordable access to health care, and every person that came into our emergency room or anyone that showed up that needed – they're delivered and they didn't have health care. We took care of them. That's the right thing to do. But we can't be sitting here with a beacon saying, come to America, you're going to get free housing, free food, and free health care.
Right. And that's where the funding for illegals comes. The money goes to these hospitals because they have to operate on people for free and treat them for free. So not if you provide money to those hospitals and what that's money for, people who come in uninsured. Who's uninsured? Illegal immigrants are uninsured. That's how it doesn't necessarily say this money's for illegal immigrants, but that's how they're handled. And we get it. And that was very competently defined for us by J.D. Vance on Fox and Friends yesterday. We brought it forward. Senator Marshall, last question. What is your prediction on how long this is last? What does your gut tell you?
Yeah, Brian, I put the over under for next Tuesday. I think by then his political base will have realized they didn't walk into a trap. They walked into a buzzsaw. When Russ vote gets through with this week and the first and next week, and President Trump, he's got the biggest megaphone I've ever seen. When he drills them, when things come out like Nancy Pelosi's, I think that was just a tattletale moment yesterday when she just lost it on camera about AOC as well. So I think by next Tuesday, Schumer says, "Okay, he'll declare victory." And we'll get on with life. At least that's my hope. So I put the over-under on next Tuesday. We'll see.
All right. Roger Marshall on the record Tuesday. Senator, thank you. Hope you're right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Listen, when we come back, I'll be able to take some calls, 1-866-408-7669. Then I'm going to bring you inside this mayor's race of national implications because you have an avowed socialist who hates capitalism and rich people, who doesn't like Netanyahu against Israel, up by 20 points. Is that the canary in the coal mine for Democrats? Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We know that there are more ICE agents on the ground now and that federal surveillance is at an all-time high. So here are some ways that you can protect yourself while organizing for your community. You should get a Faraday cage, which blocks the signal from your phone. You should disable fingerprint and facial recognition technology to unlock your phone. I also highly recommend going to your local grocery store, buying a burner phone in cash, and using encrypted apps like Signal to communicate with people and having disappearing messages on.
So that is some of the recommendations given out in Portland in order to evade police. And it's just absolutely sickening what's going on. And in Portland, we watched ICE facilities and federal buildings being ransacked and graffiti being sprayed and people being beat up and a reporter being taken punched in the face or hit with a pole in the face, and nothing matters. Why? Because that was Angelita Morito, by the way, the Portland City Council member. Why? Because they think Antifa first. They want anarchy. And now that Trump's putting troops in there, they're going to make them the target. Good luck with that. Instead of cops being told to stand down, you have a president telling federal troops to stand up and going to push these clowns back. And if you don't want to take control of your own city, well, this is our country, and the president wants to know that nothing is out of reach. to restore order, not to restore what he wants, but order. Think about that for a second. Meanwhile, you know what else happened in Chicago yesterday? Special forces dropped into an apartment building in Chicago where they had TDA members hold up in a rundown building. They were conducting human trafficking, drug trafficking, and gang activity. That's what the mayor and governor want to see happen. They want gangs to thrive, shootings to continue, because Donald Trump wants to stop it. That's how twisted he has them. But if you are an average citizen just trying to earn a living, middle, upper class, working class, but don't want to commit a crime, but want to be safe from crime, you have to speak up in support of what the government's doing. Because that's their goal. Not to put troops in the city. It's very costly. It's to restore order to America.
Hi, this is Dave Anthony. Today on the Fox News Rundown podcast, the race for governor in New Jersey. Polls show it's close, and it's one of just three elections being closely followed this fall. Go to foxnewspodcast.com to listen and follow.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You've made inflammatory statements like calling Israel an apartheid state and questioning its right to exist as a Jewish state. Just this week, you were evasive with a reporter about condemning Hamas.
Of course I condemn Hamas. Of course I've called October 7th what it was, which is a horrific war crime. And of course, my belief in a universality in international law is also the same set of beliefs that have led me to describe what's happening in Gaza as a genocide.
So people have called it a genocide, but not in America. But he does reflect the Democratic Party, who I think gives Israel a 35% approval rating, yet they get about 75% of the Jewish vote, do the Democrats. Jason Riley joins us now. Wall Street Journal columnist, Manhattan Institute, senior fellow, Fox News contributor, best-selling author. His latest book is The Affirmative Action Myth, Why Blacks Don't Need Racial Preferences to Succeed. Jason, your column, though, really caught our attention just about what's going on in this mayoral race as a topic. We did get news that Eric Adams is now endorsing Governor Cuomo, which is a big... He had to, you know, hold his nose and do that because they really hate each other. So he's trying to do that to stop Mamdani. First off, why is he so strong still? Why is he leading the pack?
Well, it's a pretty weak pack, first of all, Brian. None of these guys are very likable. Yes, Adams did endorse Cuomo, but Adams was running in the single digits. I mean, even if every Adams supporter went to Cuomo, who's in second place, he'd still be 20 points behind Mamdani. What really needs to happen is for Curtis Sliwa, the Republican candidate, to leave the race and have all of those Republican voters, in addition to the independents and the moderate Democrats, all get behind Cuomo. And then maybe Cuomo would have a shot at this. So the endorsement is important. It's the right thing to do. But I'm not sure it's going to be enough for Cuomo to put him over the top.
Why is he popular? Why is he leading? You know, what's going on?
He's running on affordability. And everyone knows New York City is very, very expensive. And so he's promising a lot of free stuff. Rent freezes. He's going to make transportation free. He's going to open government grocery stores. He's going to double the minimum wage. All of these things sound really, really good. They're straight out of the sort of socialist redistributionist playbook. They're not practical. They're not pragmatic. They won't work, but they sound good. And the other people in the race aren't pushing back hard enough at that message. And I think that's one of the reasons Mamdani is ahead.
But when he says, I don't like capitalism, and he says cops are racist, you would think that'd be the death knell without an extreme apology. Here he is talking more about the police. Cut 30.
The difficulties where, you know, for example, when I started running this race, about 200 officers were leaving the department every month. Mm-hmm. Now it's 350. We're asking cops to do everything we can think of. Mm-hmm. We're asking them to handle mental health calls. Right. We're asking them to deal with homelessness. Every year now, cops respond to 200,000 mental health calls. Yeah. So our proposal is allow the officers to do their job of tackling serious crime and create a Department of Community Safety that deals with homelessness, that deals with mental health crisis, so that we don't have response times like we do today, which are closer to 16 minutes.
Your thought about his answer?
It's ridiculous, Brian. You know what cops really want? They want the lawmakers, they want the judges, and they want the politicians to keep the people that are arrested locked up. They don't want those people back on the street a few hours later or a couple days later. That's what they want. They want the prosecutors to actually prosecute lawbreakers. That's what they want. They don't want to be blamed for every social ill in society. That's what they want. They don't want calls for defunding. That's what they don't want. And so I think his answer is ridiculous. More recently, he's proposed that a civilian review board be able to discipline police.
Cover the New York Post today. Cover the New York Post.
Not the police chief, the civilian review board, which is ridiculous. I mean, the one good thing that Eric Adams did do was hire Jessica Tisch, the new police commissioner, who is doing a fabulous, fabulous job since she's been on the job. You know, gun violence is at a record low in the city. Subway crimes are at a 15-year low. So things are moving in the right direction on that front. And that is one of the really bad outcomes that we could have from electing Mamdani, is reversing those positive trends when it comes to quality of life in the city.
So they're going to strip the commissioner of that power. The union says it would destroy morale and actually have massive walkouts because they won't do it. The sergeant union said it would ensure a mass exit off the force in New York City. No one was consulted about this, but he is going to actually go even further. He's going to pick the people on the review board that are going to all of a sudden decide to suspend a cop, all of a sudden decide to fire a cop, a bunch of people who probably got the job because they don't like cops. And we all know that there was he just brought up those people, the homeless unit. There was a homeless unit. People that deal with domestics, there were all specific units. De Blasio cut all that. Adams put some of it back. He is going to kill charter schools. He's going to kill cops. He's going to bring up crime because he's not going to have any enforcement. People think he's just a mayor. What's a big deal? I think this is a huge deal. And you know who also thinks it's a huge deal? Every Democrat, because they don't know what to do with this guy. They don't know whether to endorse him, run from him, but no one condemns him.
The two most powerful Democrats in Washington, Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, who are the highest officials in the Senate and the House, have refused to endorse so far. They're very, very hesitant to endorse Mamdani. And I think that they're afraid of him becoming the face of the Democratic Party, particularly going in to next year's midterm elections. Democrats have been bleeding working class voters in recent years, and putting a 30-something socialist in charge of the largest city in the country, they think could be a very bad look for the Democratic Party. And I think that's why they're so hesitant, and other high-ranking Democratic officials have been hesitant to endorse Mamdani. He's a big problem for the party. They might get control of New York City, but you know, we know that Democrats are united in their opposition to President Trump. They've made that very clear. What we don't know is that beyond that, what do they stand for? What are they in favor of? How far to the left do they want to go? Mamdani stands ready to fill that void, Brian, and that terrifies a lot of Democrats.
And but not only that, his ideas for making it affordable, the city affordable, is to raise taxes and also freeze rents. Does he play this out when you freeze rents? When would the rents go up on the building? When taxes go up on the building? When maintenance goes up on the building? You can't raise rents? Yeah, if you're being gouged, there's oversight boards for that. But if you're just rent, if you're offering the rent needed to keep that building afloat, and then someone comes in and freezes them, what's play that out, Jason? You're the Wall Street Journal. How does that work out financially?
Basically, when the government sets the price of rent instead of the free market, instead of supply and demand, you get shortages. What the problem is that not enough affordable housing is being built, because the builders know they won't get a return on their investment if the government determines how much they can charge in rent. That's the problem. More rent control will not fix that problem. It will make that problem worse.
Absolutely. Jason, just looking right now at what's happening in New Jersey, Jack Cittarelli, he's got Trump on his side. Last time, Trump just kind of stayed out of this. Maybe he didn't want his endorsement. But now that he did so well in New Jersey relative to it being a blue state, he seems to be gaining. He's at 2.5% in one of these polls. This was a poll that was cited in the New York Post today. It's called the, I forgot the name of it, but the poll has him 2.5 points down. The Emerson polls has him in a flat-footed tie with Mikey Sherrill. Sure. And then you have the Fox poll that has a six-point difference. Here's Cittarelli on what Sherrill's doing, and that is running against Trump. Cut 31.
If you get a flat tire today, she's going to blame the president. There's nothing she won't blame on the president. The president has nothing to do with our property taxes, nothing to do with our electricity bills, nothing to do with the failure of our public school systems, nothing to do with overdevelopment, nothing to do with the spike in nonviolent crime. That has everything to do with the people that control Trenton right now. So that's what this race is really all about.
It is, along with her character problems. She wasn't able to walk her graduation at the academy because of a cheating scandal. We know, too, that she made $7 million in investments and she went to Congress and doesn't know where it came from. She has no explanation for it. She really has no agenda. Is she vulnerable in the long run?
I think she is vulnerable, particularly because you look at a state like New Jersey, Democrats have been in control. It's like looking at a lot of these places that Democrats have been running for a very, very long time. You cannot blame Republicans for the problems in New Jersey. They haven't been in control of New Jersey. So to the extent that she's going to try and blame Donald Trump, of all people, for the problems that New Jerseyans are facing, yes, she's very vulnerable, and that's why she's trying to talk about other things.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens in the next few months, because in Virginia, the president stayed out of it. Is that a wise move?
Well, I think it's wise for the president to do what the candidate in the race wants him to do. I mean, the candidate in the race is closest to the people, the votes that are trying to be gained in that race. And so if the president can sort of defer to what the Republican in the race wants done, I think that's the best thing he can do, whether it's Virginia, whether it's New Jersey. I think that's what would be the wise course for the president.
And lastly, Jason, I'll throw you something out of left field, but I think matters a lot. In a few weeks, the president's going to meet with the president of China, President Xi, at which time he tweeted out, put on Truth Social yesterday, that he's going to have his farmers front and center. The farmers are suffering. The Chinese have just refused to buy our soybeans, and it has been a great crop, and they are paying more money to go to Brazil and elsewhere to buy soybeans. How important is this visit and getting that result? Because the farmers are his base in many ways.
It's a problem, Brian, and I think it goes back to tariff wars and how difficult it is to win a tariff war. People just escalate, and that's what China is doing, and I think we need to tone it down. No one's going to win a trade war on these grounds. He's right. I think Xi has found a spot where the president is vulnerable with farmers in some of these red states in particular, and so he's kind of got him over a barrel there. And I think that the answer is to de-escalate, whether it's tariffs on China, Europe, or other, or even with our allies. I think bringing down the temperature on the trade war is the way to go.
Even though that revenue is flowing in, you still don't like the idea of tariffs?
Well, it's a sort of shifting reason for the tariffs. Is it for revenue? Because if it's for revenue, then we want them in place permanently to continue raising revenue. And I don't think that's what we want. That's not what the farmers want. Or are the tariffs for leverage to get other countries to reduce their tariffs? So there's been a sort of shifting rationale as to why we have these tariffs in place, but haven't heard a really good reason for any of the tariffs to be in place.
Forcing manufacturing to come back, saying
that's
no tariffs.
That's another rationale.
Yeah.
That's another rationale.
I would love that
bringing
too.
Bringing back manufacturing jobs, yeah.
All right, it's going to be interesting because we know we get growth, but we also know we got to balance the budget, got to get our debt under control, and we got to get a resolve, especially when it comes to India. We got to get some type of deal there. Jason Riley, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, we covered a lot. 1-866-408-7669. I know some of you are writing me, and I just got this one email talking about the lockout before I go to break. He says, Donald Trump, this is from John, said, Donald Trump and Republicans have shut down the federal government because they didn't want to provide health care to working class. Republicans need to clearly describe the distinction between health care and health insurance. And what is required for a person to obtain each of these? Absolutely. Nothing wrong with slowing down and explaining things rather than do bullet points. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This week on the Fox True Crime Podcast, I'm joined by retired FBI Special Agent Stacey Perkins as she discusses the Bureau's Innocent Images Initiative and the many child predators she has helped to bring down.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We do need to invest in programs that acknowledge the need for safe space initiatives.
Yes.
Led by lesbian, gay, bisexual, two-spirit, trans, and gender non-conforming people. What's two-spirit?
Well, look, I don't know exactly. You guys are pulling some interesting quotes.
This is from your report.
Look at me. I feel like I'm looking at a two-faced individual because you talk about reducing violence.
Oh, no, sir.
Violence.
You're looking at somebody who's reading you your own words.
That is Hawley challenging Gregory Jackson Jr., who served as deputy director of the Biden White House Office of Gun Violence and Prevention, more recently as head of the Community Justice Action Fund, over the organization's policies on creating safe spaces for two-spirit individuals. The report was published while Jackson led the group. So they were trying to get a hold of this. And this is how they say what I had not no idea what this was. Two-spirit is a contemporary indigenous-focused umbrella term for people of Native American cultures who embody both masculine and feminine spirits, occupying a third gender status distinct from the male and female roles. So this wackiness is being pointed out, and instead of people backing it up, they're running from it. The whole pronoun thing, when's the last time people started talking about pronouns? They know. They talk about the green energy. Now people are willing to stand up and speak out about these green energy scams while Al Gore and Bill Clinton get rich off it, and all these people make it a cottage industry, and they allow us to transition our economy to something that's unaffordable, that's untested, and it's unsustainable, and we're not supposed to complain about it. Finally, it is okay to speak up and say, this makes no sense. That's what Secretary of War Hegseth's speech was about. Listen, I can't control society, but I can set the tone for our fighting force. And it's no more fat generals, no more bending standards to be politically correct. You're going to have one standard. If you're a woman, you can do it. Great. If not, you can't do that job. It doesn't mean you leave the military. And if you're a guy, big, strong guy, but you cannot do what's necessary for special forces, you can stay in the military, but you can't do that. That's what we're getting back to. And I know this, what I'm saying now sounds so logical, but there was no logic there. Remember, General Milley goes, I was very curious about my white rage. White rage? What are you talking about? Just as he got chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, getting in the political correctness of admitting there's white rage. Incredible. And he's giving everyone free lanes, to say, and so is President Trump, to go acting logically and practically in America again. And I think that's pretty cool. Like, for example, cracking down on crime. We played before Angelita Morita from the Portland City Council member, giving people consultations on how to avoid ICE, how to avoid being arrested. So now I want to bring you to the other side. A reporter for the Post, millennial, Katie Daviscourt. So she's on with Jesse last night, and she's been covering these Antifa riots. And she gets attacked while she's doing it. The person runs away. She chases them down. And in front of a cop, the cop does nothing. Here's the story in her words. Cut 22.
Last night, I got assaulted and I immediately ran to a Portland police officer, hunted down the suspect, chased her through the streets and said, this is my assault suspect. Can you guys finally do something? And I had eyes on her for about 35 minutes. Portland police refused to come in and make an arrest. And I had three officers just standing there watching me try to hunt down this suspect. And imagine my anger when I go online after doing all of that about an hour ago. And I see Portland police put out a bolo asking for the public's help in identifying my assault suspect. So that is what it's like on the ground here in Portland. And it's time for a federal crackdown.
Can you imagine that? And by the way, if you could see her, just a young girl, young woman, and she got hit in the face with a pole, and she's got a black eye, and still tough enough to go chase the person down, and the cops are not allowed to do their job. That's why Trump is there. Any nonpartisan person says, of course the president should act.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening to the show. I assume you are. We're at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. We've got a lot going on, but we do know this. Shootings are down. General crime is down. The only thing up is rape, which is not good, but at least we're cracking down on other things. But we are about to have a mayoral election of national implications, and that'll be great. With me right now is Kennedy.
Wait, a mayoral what? When was that first one? Huh? That completely changes the tenor of the race, Brian.
I didn't even introduce you yet.
Mm-hmm. They know.
Bottom of the hour, Miranda Devine's going to be on. You're on now.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and by the way, how's your podcast going?
Amazing. Kennedy Saves the World, 5 days a week. Fox News Podcast, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts, get saved.
Right. Get saved. What do you mean?
It's called Kennedy Saves the World.
Oh, get saved.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like a Christian.
Sure, born that again. Too. Whatever. You know, we're down for all of it, Brian. No judgments.
You know, you had Ainsley on.
How'd you handle
with the expletives and everything? Yeah, because that's how people see her on television. But when she goes on podcasts, everything's a curse word.
Yeah, it was like beep, 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 beep. It was like Morse code.
Right. See, but still, I'm sure people enjoyed it. It's always good to hear from her. Before we get to Kennedy, let's get to the big three.
Number three. He's attacking you as a communist, are you?
No, I'm a democratic socialist. That means I believe in dignity for all people.
Mm. He's pro dignity.
Yeah, I think... You're not a communist. I agree with that.
Oh, okay, good.
Joy. Wow, Joy Behar weighed in.
Yep. Hey, Eric, isn't the big three supposed to be just me? I mean, she's just yelling during this. More on that later. Wake up, New York City. Your front-running mayor is letting you know what a disaster he will be on schools, crime, and the economy.
Number two.
This is not about safety. This is not about immigration. This is about fomenting chaos and terrorizing the people of Chicago and cities across America.
You're insulted. You don't want to say anything.
I didn't want to hear the word fomenting today.
Crime crackdown in blue cities from Portland to Chicago. The heat is coming with one simple goal, safety for the people. Why is that bad for Democratic mayors and governors?
And your racism.
Number one.
They switched all their positions for political expediency, and now they're making the American people pay for that. It's wrong and it's shameless.
How long is this going on?
I hope it's a short one because real people are suffering because of this.
Shut down in D.C. Dems feeling the pain as Trump, Thune, and Johnson amp up the pressure because they've acquired almost all the leverage. We'll break it down. And right now, Lisa, I know you, Kennedy, you pride yourself on saying, hey, I'm not a Republican or Democrat.
I am not. That is a factual statement. Very good.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. And we've also noticed in 2013, Ted Cruz says, I want to stop Obamacare. Let's have a lockout. How'd that go? Terrible. Yeah. Barack Obama ran over him. And then we had the Freedom Caucus do a lot of this without the leverage. They have a great theme. I understand their cause, but they don't have any leverage. So they lost that. We're now witnessing.
Talking about 2018, 2019?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about leverage. I mean, it's Freedom Caucus stood up for a lot of great things, but they didn't have the numbers. Now we have the progressive side of the left controlling Chuck Schumer.
They don't have the
numbers. They don't have the leverage right now. And Trump let him know, hey, that $18 billion going to New York, I think I'm going to hold on to it.
Oh, yeah. You want to build that cute little tunnel between New York and New Jersey? We're going to put that on pause.
Put the shovels away. Mm-hmm. And that's how you do it, by the way, the tunnels.
They're underwater shovels, by the way.
Which is crazy. Right, because do you have a snorkel or you just have a full scuba outfit?
I would love to snorkel, right? But it's got to be scuba because you snorkel. It's got to be a long snorkel.
Right.
It's got to be like,
because you
got to
stay on the surface. Because how do you keep the snorkel above the water while shoveling and making a tunnel?
Tougher than you think.
Right. Mm-hmm. They used to do that, though.
They did.
In the 1880s.
That's how the railroads were built.
Right. And that was before flippers. They couldn't figure out, right? I mean, who invented flippers?
There was no underwater propulsion.
Yes.
I would say the Greeks probably did.
Right, absolutely, because they did everything.
They were seafaring folk.
I never saw them in the water, though.
They were underwater.
By the way, not much of showering, right? They weren't big into cleanliness?
Of course they were. They were always underwater. They were cleaned by the sea.
While making tunnels. Mm-hmm. All right, so they don't have any leverage, and I think little by little you're going to have Russ Folk go, I think I'm just going to start cutting programs and cutting jobs. And that's going to amp up the pressure. Plus, they're looking to change the Big Beautiful Bill fundamentally, which they didn't weigh in on because they didn't need any votes. They didn't give any votes. But you can't just go back and say, undo health care, I'm going to shut down the government. It's not going to work like that.
No, it doesn't work like that. And also, if your big socialized medicine plan requires funding
constantly
that you would only use during pandemics, a global crisis,
yes,
maybe there's something fundamentally wrong with said socialist healthcare plan.
So that's really what we're saying now. And now they have breaking up 20 lawmakers are meeting on their own outside leadership to try to come up with some way to solve it. But AOC said, listen, you keep on bringing my name up saying that Chuck Schumer's being tough because he's afraid of me primarying. She had an idea. Cut 7.
I saw some Republican members of Congress saying, oh, well, if we have this shutdown, it's because of AOC. Well, if that's the case, my office is open and you are free to walk in and negotiate with me directly.
Read between the lines. Does she really want her people to walk in, or is she trying to be a leader?
She would love to be a leader because the leadership in the Democrat caucus sucks. I don't think she's that great. I think that she's one of those people that is out to huff her own Musk. She doesn't really, she's not about problem solving. She's about problem creating,
yes,
in order to get more attention.
Right. Cut 8 is Nancy Pelosi dealing with AOC's comment.
There was a thought from the Republicans that AOC is directing this, and she said that senators are welcome to go to her office directly. Is she?
Why are you saying such a ridiculous thing? Why are you saying? She is not directing this. She's wonderful. She's a real team player and the rest of that. You started by saying Republicans saying that she's directing this. She is not. Hakeem Jeffries is. She's an articulate spokesperson for her point of view.
Just go to bed. Take a nap.
Well, but she gets mad at the questioner. I've seen her get mad on CNN, MSNBC.
Yeah,
but for
remember
asking,
when she was on CNN with what's his name, who just wrote the Biden book, Jake Tapper, and she got mad at him for asking a question relating to the news cycle in real life. And she's like, how dare you? I thought we were just going to talk about my book, Jake.
Right. It's absolutely insane. You know, they get on Trump for saying you're a terrible reporter and this, but he takes their questions.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually answers their questions. What about the revelation today, although I want to stay with the lockdown, about Joe Biden with palm cards, with pictures of Hillary Clinton and biographies, Chuck Schumer and biographies?
He was gone.
That
is someone who is being completely propped up.
Tell me you were not surprised by this.
It's wholly unsurprising. It's just really sad that that's the state he was in, that he couldn't how many people have we heard from? How many Democrats have said, well, yeah, he didn't recognize me. I saw him at the White House picnic. I wanted to run some ideas by him. And he's like, oh, nice to meet you, young man. It's like, actually, it's Eric Swalwell.
He said that.
I'm your grandson. Swalwell said that. He didn't recognize me.
But they weren't saying it at the time. They showed no guts, nobody.
Tapper certainly didn't say it at the time.
He challenged
anyone who was like, yeah, maybe Biden is old and frail. Are you a doctor?
After the election.
Yeah, but after the election when he could make some money, he's
right.
Like, oh, well, our reporting. It's like, no. Alex Thompson from Axios was the only one who was reporting that in real time, and you guys attacked him.
Did he see the co-author of the book, too?
Yes.
Yeah, so he got credit, and Jake Tapper kind of put his name on it.
Mm-hmm.
So on the Biden thing, do you see my tab system, by the way?
Very impressive.
Yeah, thanks.
I thought that was a legal brief that you were filing later.
Right, to sue you.
Oh,
finally.
Good Lord.
So,
what a day.
Did you see this Mary Bruce? The questions and answers of ABC reporter Mary Bruce was on the card, the palm card of Joe Biden's.
Hmm.
So the question.
We knew this was happening all along, by the way. We knew that KJP was pre-screening these questions before they were called upon. So Joe Biden knew what the questions were, knew what the answer was supposed to be in advance before he would call on members of the press.
Right, now,
and it had to be orderly, and no one could say anything. There couldn't be bright lights because he would seize up.
But don't diminish this revelation to see it in black and white on the palm card.
Yeah.
It said, here's the question. Okay.
Okay.
How do you view the path forward? How do you think about your place in history? My goodness, if you can't roll out of bed and know the answer to that question, you need that question ahead of time. You need that written down anywhere.
Yeah, that's really sad. You shouldn't be president
for our country.
If you need, yeah. Yes. So, this is a person who was compromised, frail, past his prime, obviously in a great state of mental disrepair, and still insisted on being the most powerful person in the country.
So Fox Digital got these five cards. Four of the five cards obtained by Fox Digital are stamped with a disclaimer reading, President has seen.
Oh, great.
So we had a chance to pre-read these on the few press conferences he had. And just contrast that what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with a president that talks four times a day to anybody, random questions, it doesn't matter.
No, and if you see him on screen, you have no idea how long he's going to go.
Right.
Like, I was in the green room the other day, and I think I got into hair and makeup at like 12:05. And it was during outnumbered, and I was like, they may not have a show because the president was talking.
Yeah.
He was talking to the press. He was talking to members of his cabinet. He was just talking. He was going off about anything that people would throw at him. And Joe Biden could never, ever put himself in that position.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to demand this. I don't think at this level. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to demand this in the future. By the way, thanks for turning down that call.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I'll have guests who get a call and they'll leave.
I've seen it.
Like, you're on a national radio show, but my housekeeper can't find her keys. So I got to go. So I was just amazed. This is the full circle. Nancy Pelosi, how we want to criticize her. So fast forward to 2024. She watches the collapse in June. Barack Obama doesn't do anything. Hakeem Jeffries doesn't do anything. Schumer doesn't do anything. She steps up. And she rips him, calls over and said, put your pollster on. You're getting killed. You were terrible. I'm still winning. No, you're not. And then afterwards, she hops on MSNBC and say, he has to tell me if he wants to stay. He wants to stay in this race. And he keeps saying, I want to stay. She has to tell him. It was all her that threw him overboard, which is why they don't talk.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for someone doing something for the party, late. She was the only one. The guys never stepped up. Obama never stepped up. Nobody stepped up.
Because it was messy. And it's like, and they were the ones who allowed the mess to fester for as long as it did.
Right.
Till it got to the point where you had no choice. So now his legacy is the guy who was forced out of the race because he was too old.
And was he ever there when these palm cards and things like that?
Not from January 20th, 2021 forward. He was not there.
Her name is Kennedy. Enough said. Back in a moment.
Scapegoat. You know what a scapegoat is? They get a goat and they heap all of the ills onto the goat and then they run the goat out of town.
Breaking news. The latest headlines. Exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We do need to invest in programs that acknowledge the need for safe space initiatives.
Yes.
Led by lesbian, gay, bisexual, two-spirit, trans, and gender nonconforming people. What's two-spirit?
Well, look, I don't know exactly. You guys are pulling some interesting quotes.
This is from your report.
Look at me. I feel like I'm looking at a two-faced individual because you talk about reducing violence.
Oh, no, sir.
Violence.
You're looking at somebody who's reading you your own words.
So that is from the Two-Spirit is a contemporary. And by the way, Kennedy's here. Two-Spirit is a contemporary indigenous-focused umbrella term for people of Native American cultures who embody both masculine and feminine spirits. Mm. And that was Hawley challenging Gregory Jackson, who served as deputy director of the Biden White House Office of Gun Violence and Prevention. So how off was just about everything during those years?
Yeah.
And what spirit are you?
That's a spirit of 76, I would say.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Which is
well, got a big 250 next year.
Went well for us.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
I'm going by the mean spirited. I'm a little mean spirited today.
No, you're not.
But I mean, this is the stuff that when we were Kennedy, we've been on the air so long together. This was once something that we've go, oh, do we have to learn this now? Pronouns, is this what people are talking about?
Yeah, every
now,
Stanford with their language, like, don't call it a master bedroom.
Right.
It's called a primary bedroom because that might offend someone.
The NBA can't call themselves owners because it's bad. They can't call themselves owners. Men who
neither can people who own pets.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to offend your dog if you say
I'm
a dog
owner.
But now
we can.
Yeah,
even God. Mayor Pete, no pronouns and a beard.
He cannot serve in right. Pete Hicks' military with
right.
that beard.
I love that speech, by the way. Okay. Man, it's interesting. Thanks for building on that. Here is Kimmel and Colbert. Kimmel on Colbert.
Oh, God.
Cut 39.
We're doing something unprecedented tonight. We thought it might be a fun way to drive the president nuts.
That son of a, you know, is really unbelievable.
Mr. Son of a. I mean, Mr.
Son of a.
His royal. Yes. Yeah, no, I never imagined that we'd ever have a president like this. And I hope we don't ever have another president like this again.
Colbert, Kimmel on Colbert's couch. He's going against himself.
Yeah.
What happened the days when Joey Bishop went against Johnny Carson and they stopped speaking? Joan Rivers went against Carson and there was a bloodlust feud. You know, when Chevy Chase spun. I mean, there used to be wars at night. Leno against Letterman. Mm-hmm. We want to win. That's because America. You can't go on the other guy's couch.
No. David Letterman never would have gone on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And
no,
like,
well, they hate each other.
Yeah.
Is that whole thing.
And like George W. Bush is a hack. Even though they probably. Well, I don't know. Leno's pretty apolitical. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a registered Republican.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think that he's like you, like calls as like calling the shots. Who? What do you like about each
I
person?
I hope one day I have as many cars as he does.
Right. Do you find that, who do you think the funniest talk show host away from the cameras?
Jimmy Fallon.
True. How about not out of Fox?
Oh, like of the...
Out of all the guys that have done it and not done it, like they got the three in the middle, Letterman.
I used
Leno.
To love Letterman, but he was notoriously prickly off camera.
Right.
And didn't want anyone to talk to him. And it's like, he went to the same college as my parents in Indiana.
Ball State.
Yeah. My parents went to Ball State. That's where they met.
To me, the funniest is Conan O'Brien.
Conan's amazing.
I listened to his show on Sirius. And number one, I didn't really watch his late night show because of the job I have. But I just can't believe in the moment how funny. I don't think anyone's close. Now you know why Lorne Michaels said, this guy's a writer, but he will be a great host.
Yes. And he knew that he was not a comedic performer on a sketch show, but that there was something about him that was so likable
yeah.
and so funny and smart, because it's hard to be that smart and that intellectual and come from Harvard and still be that goofy and adolescent.
Right. And what do you think that means in the big picture? Like, of all the topics I picked.
I went on Conan's show, Letterman, and The Tonight Show with Leno, and Conan was by far the funniest and the most chatty in between commercials.
Like, legitimate chatty, not like, well, can you believe this weather?
No, he was so funny.
Okay, out of all those shows, I'm trying to think. I've been on none of them. So I am even more jealous of you. Kennedy, check out our podcast.
Brian Kilmeade.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Number one, he's attacking you as a communist. Are you?
No, I'm a democratic socialist. That means I believe in dignity for all people.
It means more than that.
Yeah, I think...
You're not a communist. I agree with that.
No, I'm not a communist. And I think, you know, a lot of New Yorkers have asked me, what does it mean that you're a democratic socialist?
Yeah.
And I tell them to think about the words of Dr. King from decades ago. He said, call it democracy or call it democratic socialism, there has to be a better distribution of wealth for all of God's children in this country. And that's the heart of it.
No offense, but Martin Luther King Jr. and everything he wrote, that prompted me to look it up. He is socialist. He did not like capitalism, but he was not running for office. He wasn't an economist. He was never a mayor. He was an activist and a great leader and a civil rights warrior. Got it. But I didn't want him to balance my checkbook, and I certainly didn't want to run my city. Joining us now is Miranda Devine, Fox News contributor, New York Post columnist, coming in on Zohra Mamdani and commenting on basically the guy with a 20-point lead in the race. But now the race is without Eric Adams as of Sunday, and it looks like Eric Adams is endorsing Cuomo, leaving Sliwa, Cuomo, and Mamdani. Where's this going, Miranda? Where's this race going? Is it trending? Is it going to end up like it is right now?
Look, I don't like people talking about it as if it's inevitable that Mamdani is going to win. I know that's what the polls are showing, but the polls have been wrong a lot of the time before, and this sort of feeling of inevitability only helps his campaign and dispirits voters who in New York are notoriously apathetic. You know, we're lucky if 20-25% of voters actually even cast a ballot in the mayoral elections. And that's how we ended up with Bill de Blasio, you know.
For no one showed up.
Who was a disaster. No one shows up. And it's the same thing with Mamdani. Now, latest poll, Emerson poll, just before Adams dropped out, had him at 43%. I've seen other polls, 45. Cuomo's in the 20s. Sliwa is third. And then we had Adams had 7%. So I'm not sure that his 7% is going to go entirely to whoever he endorses. I doubt it. But even if it did, it's not enough. However, Mamdani is starting to be put under scrutiny. And he did a local New York Fox interview the other day, and he was a complete car crash.
I think Miranda just froze. Try to unfreeze her there for a second. I think we just lost transmission. But so we'll take a look at that. And it's true. We're going to play some cuts from there. On The Views, he just basically got a walk in the park. They treated him like a returning war hero, which is insane because they don't even know him. And it's only, you know, you have Cuomo, who they worshipped also. So that's his main competition. Miranda, go ahead. You said the local Fox interview was a disaster.
Yeah, total car crash. And it's because he can't explain his policies. He can't explain the democratic socialist platform that he was elected on in the local council because it is so the opposite of what citizens want. You know, he wants to defund police. He wants to decriminalize misdemeanors. He was asked about prostitution. You know, would you decriminalize prostitution? He couldn't answer the question because, of course, he does want to do that. So he's obviously, you know, anyone with any knowledge or brains knows that the guy is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And, you know, he's got a nice banter and a nice sort of cheesy TikTok style. But I think as soon as voters start waking up to the threat that he is and the reality of his platforms and that he's actually dishonest, he's portraying himself as something that he's not. And even in, you know, friendly interview situations, he's unable to explain himself. His minders are starting to intervene in interviews. You know, the wheels can fall off very, very easily. It just needs a little prod. They're keeping him so wrapped in cotton wool, kind of like the Joe Biden basement campaign. It's me and others of my colleagues at the New York Post have requested interviews with him. I've asked him to come on the podcast. It's just never happens. He knows that it's risky for him to have any sort of scrutiny. So I think there are two things we have to wake up New Yorkers that they need to get out and vote. And whether it's Cuomo or Sliwa, it has to be one of them. We have to choose one of them. I'm not sure. I think Sliwa has a good heart. He has the right policies. You know, people I trust say he'll be the next Rudy Giuliani. But the numbers aren't with him. And I think it's very hard to get a Republican voted in this city. And Lee Zeldin was fantastic and he couldn't do it. So I think, unfortunately, Cuomo
you think he should drop out? You think Sliwa should drop out?
Well, he, you know,
he's
if
got
we have
10%
any
to 15%.
Not, yeah, yeah. If we have any chance of not having Mamdani, I think he has to, I don't believe the polls, but those numbers are so enormous.
But Miranda, my problem is that Cuomo's a disaster, an arrogant idiot that screwed up the pandemic and screwed up everybody's lives. He apologized yesterday to the Jewish community for breaking up their, or not allowing them to have the ability to get together during the pandemic. I don't know how far that's going to go. But here is Mandami yesterday, asked about his anti-cop statements. Basically, he says they're all racist. Remember? Cut 29.
Back in 2020, you called for defunding the police, something you've since walked back. You also called the NYPD racist, anti-queer, and a threat to public safety in 2020, but now agree they deserve an apology. Can I ask, have you formally apologized to the NYPD?
These are conversations that I'm having individually with officers. And I've appreciated that because it's through those conversations with rank and file officers that I've learned more about the difficulties of this job.
What's the answer? He won't answer the simplest question. Of course, let me use this term, this network, to apologize to cops retired and active.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he's a phony. But, you know, I agree with what you're saying about Cuomo. Of course. I mean, I cannot stand him, except that he's better than Mamdani. And also, he did achieve some things during his term. I know he caused a lot of mayhem. He was terrible during COVID. He also, ushered in bail reform. He was completely weak when it came to standing up to the left.
Destroyed nuclear power. And nuclear power. Prevented fracking.
Exactly. So it made energy more expensive. All of the above, I agree. However, his ads now, he's hitting the right notes. He's talking about refunding the police. He's talking about law and order. He's talking about energy bills. And when he was governor, he did open LaGuardia, which is great. He did open the Tappan Zee Bridge, or whatever he calls it, the Mario Cuomo Bridge. He was actually quite good at making things happen. He's a bully. And if he uses his bullying and his orneriness against the left wing of his party, he could actually achieve something, and you would forgive him for everything else if he managed to do that. I don't know if he has the guts. It's definitely a risk, but the risk is Mamdani. So it's the devil, you know, I think. We don't want to go with the devil that knows nothing and is an avowed socialist, but he's a communist. He's a Marxist.
So let's go a little bit further. Israel, he's anti-Israel, right? He won't call Hamas a terror organization. So listen closely. Cut 28.
You've made inflammatory statements like calling Israel an apartheid state and questioning its right to exist as a Jewish state. Just this week, you were evasive with a reporter about condemning Hamas.
Of course I condemn Hamas. Of course I've called October 7th what it was, which is a horrific war crime. And of course, my belief in a universality in international law is also the same set of beliefs that have led me to describe what's happening in Gaza as a genocide.
Really? It's allowed him to call it a genocide. Your thoughts, Miranda?
It's just gobbledygook, isn't it? Smoothly done. You've got to take your hat off to his ability to come across as a very authentic phony. Everything he said, he seems to be able to say two things at the same time, and people believe it, or they don't engage their brains, or it doesn't matter. He has a young cohort of organizers and activists who are out there. It's a very active campaign. Really, we're not seeing much of Cuomo at all. And Sliwa is trying. He is a little energizer bunny. Cuomo's just, I don't know. He seems to be very low energy compared to Mamdani.
I want to bring you to another one, an episode from your podcast that's getting a lot of traction, in your interview with Howard Lutnick. And you asked him about Epstein, because everybody in high finance knew this guy. And when people say, well, why were you hanging out with Epstein? Because no one really knew that side of him, or some did, or heard rumors about it. But like, when you have that much money, you go to the same parties, you go to the same islands, you go to the same ships. That's just the way it is. Now, I always equate it to, there's a lot of people who thought O.J. Simpson was a great guy. Well, one day he gets up and he murders beats up and murders two people, right? And they go, wow, why are we with O.J.? Well, I didn't know that side of him. You know, Harvey Weinstein. Well, I did a million movies with him. I financed him. Well, look at that. You know, then we find out he's the brutality of Harvey Weinstein. So with Jeffrey Epstein, whatever you think, he was hanging out with the who's who of royalty, of politics, and finance. One of which, to a degree, was Howard Lutnick, who's also a high finance guy. Here he is talking to you about why Jeffrey Epstein knew so many people and why he had so much money.
So how come Bill Gates and all these other people could hang around him and not see what you saw? Or did they see it and ignore it?
No, they participated.
Right.
That's what his MO was, you know, get a massage. And what happened in that massage room, I assume, was on video. This guy was the greatest blackmailer ever. Blackmailed people. That's how he had money. So
what happened to those videos? Why is there now such a dearth of information when, you know, Donald Trump's people are running the FBI and the DOJ?
I assume way back when, mm-hmm. they traded those videos in exchange for him getting that 18-month sentence, which allowed him to have visits and be out of jail. I mean, he's a serial sex offender. How could he get 18 months and be able to go to his office during the day and have visitors and stuff? It must have been a trade. So my assumption, not, I have no knowledge, but my assumption is there was a trade for the videos because there were people on those videos.
So I'm sure the White House wasn't thrilled talking about Epstein, but you got him talking about it. And what was your takeaway?
Well, the reason was because Epstein had a house on the Upper East Side. And so Howard Lutnick and his wife moved in next door. This was before Epstein was charged or anyone knew about his unsavory habits. But so they just moved in, and Epstein sent an assistant over to knock on the door and invite them over for a cup of coffee, meet the neighbors. So they trotted over there and they walked in, and Epstein said, "Oh, I'll show you around the house." They shared a wall, this beautiful big brownstone, and there was this closed door off the living room, and Epstein opened it, and all that was in the room, should have been the dining room, but was this massage table. And Lutnick was sort of puzzled, and he said, why have you got a massage table in the middle of your dining room? How often do you take a massage? And Epstein said, he moved in really close, Lutnick said, right to his face. And he said in this sort of very sleazy way, every day, but only the right sort of massage, something like that. And Howard Lutnick standing there with his wife, and he was just disgusted. And so they decided very quickly after that to leave. And he said in the few steps back to their house, they turned to each other and said, "We are never going to go and see that guy again." And he said it was just so obvious that he was a sleaze. And then you came in, well, why didn't other people see what you saw? Mm-hmm. And he's talking about, when I said tapes, I'm talking about there was an FBI, in that original plea deal, the FBI told the prosecutors that Epstein had cameras all over the house. But there was never any evidence that tapes existed. The couple of the victims said that there were, but one of them recanted, and I think Virginia Giuffre might have said it as well. I don't think she recanted, but she committed suicide recently. So we don't really know if those tapes existed. All we know is that he had hidden cameras all over the house, according to the FBI. So it stands to reason that there were tapes. I don't know the rest of it. And Howard Lutnick says he doesn't really know, but he knows everybody in Wall Street, worked on Wall Street all his life. He, I think, is expressing the view of Wall Street. That's what the people who knew Epstein the best, that's what they thought of him. Whether it's just rumor, I don't know. Nobody knows. But I think it probably... I'm being told today by one of my colleagues that it was a shock to the DOJ.
Miranda, where do you get your podcast?
You can get it anywhere, YouTube, Amazon, Apple, wherever you get your podcast.
You do a great job. Miranda, thanks so much. Also with the New York Post. Appreciate it. Back in a moment.
Thanks, Brian.
It's Brian Kilmeade. It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We are in a fascist moment. Mm-hmm. And what that means is a right-wing white nationalist, white supremacist moment, and that is centered around hierarchy. If you go back before the 20th century, there were no income taxes, there were no regulations on business. You could earn as much money as you want, leave 100% of it to your children with no taxes. Right. That's the world they want back.
So that is Joy Reid on some outlet, and she is out there saying their extreme things, but she could do whatever she wants now and don't have to worry about anyone reining her in. But her, Don Lemon, that other clown who left CNN, are all doing their extreme left-wing things, and it's not based in reality, and they're saying their extremist things about Trump. What people don't understand is Trump is doing more in 8 months than they could ever imagine. Executive orders, I wish there were more legislation, but nobody can keep up. He's already passed his economic plan in the massive bill that passed in September, like it or not. He's taken on the tariffs, reorganizing trade, taking out Iran's nuclear plant. At the very least, set them back seriously when we thought they were on the cusp. Does anyone think that now? And, you know, we'll see if he can land the plane with China and help out our farmers immediately. At the same time, he's also can't be underappreciated how he's stopping the political correctness. The whole pronoun era has stopped. The whole watching everything you say, the affirmative action. When you say, well, affirmative action doesn't work, you're not labeled a racist. When they say just have meritocracy, level the playing field, everyone should be treated the same. And not treated extra special because of your ethnic background or what the perceived liabilities are in your past or your heritage. All this stuff is happening. Look at schools. For the longest time, they said, you know, schools are a mess. You know, the Republicans lost the schools. He's taking on every Ivy League school because of their extreme anti-Semitism, intolerance, pro-Hamas attitudes. And then he went in there, looked at the curriculum, and hopefully there'll be a subtle, smart way to a free enterprise way of broadening out their faculty. So you get a conservative history professor, and you might get a moderate one and a liberal one and a political science professor and a physicist that doesn't hate America. He's doing this all in real time within 8 months. At the same time, cracking down on crime. And I can't forget about illegal immigration. Whoever thought the border would be sealed and pursuing the illegals amongst us? Whoever thought a million people would deport themselves? And they did. It's closer to 2 million. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Can't wait to see you November 1st in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. History, Liberty, and Laughs on Fox Nation. But I want to see you in person.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I am joined by Executive Vice President at Targeted Victory, Matt Gorman.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. It's going to be a busy hour. Appreciate you being here. A lot on the docket today and a lot of moving parts, but we don't have a moving government, which is interesting. I've done that. You know, they said 7 years since there have been a significant shutdown of significant days. We have a great show so far. We are covering it all. We're all over Washington because the lawmakers are in town. This is a Jewish holiday, so a lot cannot negotiate, talk, do interviews. They're obviously understood. Sadly, there was an attack on a synagogue over in Britain. There was a Hamas group of three that was about to attack a Jewish site in Germany that was thwarted, thankfully. A little bit later this hour, we're going to talk to Democrat Julian Epstein. He's an expert there, and Steve Hilton is standing by as Steve tries to become the next governor of California. So let's get to the big three.
Number three. He's attacking you as a communist, are you?
No, I'm a democratic socialist. That means I believe in dignity for all people.
It means more than that.
Yeah, I think...
You're not a communist. I agree with that.
Wake up, New York City. Your front-runner mayor is letting you know what a disaster he will be for the schools, for crime, and the economy. We review the latest revelations from the 33-year-old anti-Semitic communist.
Number two.
This is not about safety. This is not about immigration. This is about fomenting chaos and terrorizing the people of Chicago and cities across America.
Crime crackdown in the blue cities from Portland to Chicago. The heat is coming from coming with one simple goal, safety for the people. Dems just don't see it that way. I find it hard to believe, but they're actually going to bat for anarchy.
Number one.
They switched all their positions for political expediency, and now they're making the American people pay for that. It's wrong and it's shameless.
How long is this going on?
I hope it's a short one because real people are suffering because of it.
I agree. Shutdown in D.C. Dems feel the pain as Trump, Thune, and Johnson amp up the pressure as they have acquired almost all the leverage. We'll break it down. I mean, you have a situation on the left. They can't hide it. You know, sometimes they hide the fissures and you hear reports, according to Axios or Fox News Digital, that say behind the scenes, Democrats are fracturing. No, in front of the camera, the extreme left wing told Chuck Schumer, do not go for a 10-day extension while they negotiate. The extreme left wing is running the party. Not my statement, but it's Jared Golden's statement. He is a Democrat from Maine. He says this government shutdown is the result of hardball politics driven by the demands of far left groups. They are making the Democratic Party leaders put on a show of their opposition to President Trump. Golden represents one of the most conservative districts of any house. I get it. But now they're pointing to some Democrats for their own political purposes and the fact that they're retiring close to maybe jumping ship and providing the five still needed to put the government back to work. Christian Gillibrand could jump. Brian Schatz, currently a hard no, but he voted to keep open last time. Senator Kristen Gillibrand called the looming health care premium increases a Republican manufacturing crisis, but Trump's move to withhold $18 billion from New York City is directly hitting her at home. Dick Durbin, retiring, faced lots of pressure not to break with Schumer, but might. Maggie Hassan, a moderate who voted against the shutdown in March. Gary Peters is retiring. They think he's vulnerable because in Michigan is somewhat purple. Janine Shaheen was on with us today on Fox and Friends, and she did not seem like she was dug in on this shutdown. And John Ossoff in, I think, a red state of Georgia might not have a choice. He might have to join Angus King and Amasto and Fetterman in voting for this. Let's bring in Steve Hilton, a Republican California gubernatorial candidate, served as director of strategy for Prime Minister David Cameron in 2010 and 2012. Steve, welcome back. Your thought about this lockdown and how it's resonating out on the West Coast.
Well, look, we know exactly what their demands mean in practice here in California, because Gavin Newsom's been doing it here. We have. And this year, he even increased the budget on free health care for illegal immigrants. So it's a direct, when they say they don't want this, they're doing it. They're doing it here in California. And even as he pretended to restrict it a little bit in response to public outcry, even in California, he actually sneakily increased the budget. Over $12 billion spent just by California taxpayers for free health care for illegal immigrants. And the other point that we've got to note, when you hear the Democrats running around, you see this in their sort of pathetic attempts to try and win people over to their position on the shutdown. You hear them talking about, oh, community hospitals closing and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
You know why are they closing? And again, this is happening all over California. I'm on the road the whole time. They're closing because they can't cope with the number of illegal immigrants who are coming in to try and get services there. Just as schools are overwhelmed, the housing is overwhelmed, everything is overwhelmed, and it's worst here in California because everything is worst here because we've had the extreme end of these Democrat policies. And it's just a very clear point that I'm making, which is when I'm governor, all of this will end. We will not be paying taxpayer money for free health care for people who are here illegally. And that's just such an obvious common sense position. It's unbelievable to me that the Democrats keep taking these positions that are just so out of step with normal common sense American people, even here in California. It just reminds me of, you know, when they were defending the wife beater who was here illegally, the criminal, and they were taking his position, his side. And you think, what's wrong with these Democrats? Don't they realize how insane they appear to regular people?
So I want you to hear what Ro Khanna said. Now, what you're saying is, look, I'm an illegal. You don't have it. Maybe you don't have an insurance card, but you walk in there, there's money given to these hospitals to treat you. In fact, there's enough money in some states that they actually recruit you. So they say, well, you didn't give that to illegal immigrants, but you gave it to the hospitals to treat illegal immigrants because Ronald Reagan in the 1980s said whoever walks in needs to be taken care of. Listen to Ro Khanna, basically admitting it, a California congressman, cut six.
In terms of health care, the reality is they're just not being honest. The amount of money that actually is going towards people who are undocumented is such a small portion of the Medicaid cuts or the Affordable Care Act, if at all. And so we can argue that point, but the reality that even the vice president would acknowledge, that anyone who looks at the numbers will acknowledge, is 90 to 95% of the funding we're talking about is talking about funding for American citizens.
It's they made this thing, made people way too eligible during the pandemic. They don't want to let have it come down. All the Obama subsidies for the disaster, which is Obamacare, are the pandemic levels. They don't want to make it come down. I want you to hear Speaker Johnson, cut five.
The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, on August 25th published a letter, and they said this is going to do exactly what Republicans said. They estimate that 2.3 million illegal recipients for Medicaid will be pushed off the rolls because of our reforms. And then it's going to save $185 billion of taxpayer funds. So they want to return all those ineligible people back to the rolls, and many of them are illegal aliens.
So it's tough taking down a program, Steve, but they're trying.
Exactly. And there's so many scams going on like this. I mean, you've got, again, California is as so often leading the way in a disastrous negative direction. There's a scam, they call it the provider tax, which is a tax which is basically collusion and corruption with the medical industry, where they create this tax on the providers of healthcare that enables more federal money to go into subsidize their extreme policies in terms of funding illegal immigrants for healthcare here in California. It's called Medi-Cal, the California version of Medicaid. So it's just not what they're saying is simply not true. Ro Khanna admitted it, and it's indefensible. It is absolutely indefensible at any time, but especially when we have massive budget deficits, a massive fiscal problem, and the idea that you're going to spend money to not just on people who shouldn't be here, but the fact that they've been incentivizing people to come here because of these benefits that are provided. That's the other aspect of it that is so important. You can close the border wall, and that's happened because of the firm action from the Trump administration, but you also need to close the incentives that draw people to America on the basis that they assume, oh, I'll get there and everything's going to be handed to me on a plate and it's free and it's all fine. And the people, by the way, who hate that the most are legal immigrants like myself, but many millions of them who just look at what's going on. They say, well, we work hard. We did it the right way. We don't get any of this free stuff. Why should these other people?
Yeah, it's just amazing what's going on. You got all these governors and Democrats also pushing back when it comes to cracking down on crime. 800 arrests made in Chicago. We don't need your help. 56 people shot over the weekend. We don't need your help. In California, you see illegal immigration, a massive homelessness. We don't need your help. So it's just all politics. They're not showing that they care about the people. So how are you trying to resonate in California from the Republican perspective?
Well, just common sense policies that will bring about the change that people want. So it's very simple, practical things. I'll just give you an example just on crime that you're talking about right there. You've got, again, Karen Bass. I saw her last night just gaslighting everyone, saying, oh, we don't need help. We don't need the federal government. We've got, what did she say? Dramatically reducing crime in Los Angeles. What a joke. Everyone can see that's not true, because here's what's happening, and here's how I'm going to turn it around in California. From the governor's desk, Gavin Newsom, for years now, has been closing state prisons. He closed four, and a fifth is about to close. Tens of thousands of dangerous, violent criminals have been released into the community or transferred to county jails, which are now in turn completely overrun. That means that the local level, what you're getting in California, is basically catch and release, because there's nowhere to put anyone. That means that law enforcement are totally demoralized. They say, and I speak to them, they say, what's the point in going after criminals, because they're just going to be released straight away? That in turn means the public understands that, and they say, what's the point in reporting a crime, because nothing's going to happen? The entire system has collapsed in terms of confidence, and the rot starts at the top with Gavin Newsom's prison closure program, which I will reverse, increase prison capacity so we can get crime under control. And so it's just practical things like that, not ideological, not divisive, just common sense things that will make life better in California. I'm on the road the whole time, and this is, people are desperate for change, and it's on crime, it's on things like our gas prices, which is the highest in the country, working class people being screwed by that. I've got a plan to roll back the environmental nonsense that's driving up gas prices. So we have $3 gas, which in California is like, you know, the rest of the country, you think, what's so good about that, that we have that anyway? In California, we're heading towards $8 gas because of Newsom's policies. So
what about GM? GM saying we're not going to build, we're going to continue to sell gas cars. And he got ripped by Governor Newsom. How dare you change your policy? But they have to. The electric car sales are down 8% nationwide. The subsidies are done.
Exactly. Without the subsidies, no one wants it because it's not practical. And the other point is that we have abundant oil and gas in California that Gavin Newsom has been shutting down the industry. And so he's trying to make everything electric. The electric bills in California, the grid can't cope because he's forcing wind and solar instead of more reliable natural gas power generation. So he wants to electrify everything. At the same time, he's making the grid unstable with his ridiculous climate policies. And so what's the result? Electricity bills have doubled in California, and they are now the highest in the entire country, apart from Hawaii. It's just yet another example of their ideology that drives out any kind of common sense or practicality. And I just think that if people look at California and they say, well, how can a Republican win? I'm telling you, next year is going to be a massive wake-up call because people are sick of it in California. They've never had a candidate who's just gone out there in the way that I'm already doing and just making these arguments in a positive way and saying there is a choice. We don't have to put up with this in California. We can change direction. And I think next year is going to be a shock to a lot of people.
Porter in the Emerson poll is leading the pack with 16. You got 10% of the vote, and Bianco's got 8% of the vote. Is this the field, basically?
It looks like it. It seems that there may be one other current senator, Alex Padilla, who's just another machine politician non-entity. I mean, that's the truth. We've had 15 years of one-party rule in California. The results are a total disaster. The worst on pretty much every single thing you look at, California is the worst in America. Right now, we have the highest unemployment rate, the highest poverty rate, the highest costs, as I mentioned, for gas, electricity, water, everything. It's just so bad. And so all the people that they're putting up on the other side are just more of the same. These machine politicians who just have, how can these Democrats whose policies caused the problem possibly be the answer? And so I think that we're going to see, it's early in the race and a lot of people aren't paying attention yet. And there's a huge, and when you see these polls, and it's encouraging that in pretty much all of the polls, I'm in the top two. We have a jungle primary system in California, so you've got to be in the top two to get through to. I'm in the top two in most of the polls. But honestly, it's very early. You have huge numbers of don't knows still. So far, so good. But we're just going to be stepping up the pace and just making these arguments so that people realize that they don't have to put up with the nonsense in California anymore.
Real quick, how's the Kamala Harris book tour going? And how's it resonating in California? And does it become clearer why she's not running for governor?
Exactly, because what's she got to offer? She's got nothing. I mean, it's so hilarious to see even the Democrats in California just you know, thanking their lucky stars that she didn't get in the race because she's such a liability.
Thanks.
Not really any interest in her book.
Steve, thanks so much. I know I know that the book tour ended with a thud. They did go up there because she called out so many Democrats. But clearly she doesn't want to do the work necessary to be governor, which is a hard job. You can't be the Queen of England and have that approach with California because a lot has to be fixed. Steve Hilton thinks he can do it. The Republican gubernatorial candidate over in California, just 5 points from the lead. Don't move, everybody. Steve Hilton, thanks so much.
Thank you, Bob.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Unfortunately, because the Democrats shut down the government, the president has directed his cabinet, and the Office of Management and Budget is working with agencies across the board to identify where cuts can be made. And we believe that layoffs are imminent. They are, unfortunately, a consequence of this government shutdown.
Welcome back, everybody. Got a couple of minutes. I went a little long there with Steve Hilton, but just it's important. I got Julian Epstein next. We'll talk about what's happening in politics. But the shutdown is going to continue. It's not going to end today. It's got a shot at ending on Friday. I remember J.D. Vance said, I would not be surprised if more people just jumped over and reopened the government and with a promise of dealing with health care or the Affordable Care Act at some point. But do you realize since Barack Obama passed the Obamacare, what a disaster it's been? I know some people think it's gotten more approval, but it has to keep being fixed every year. You know, Trump could have dropped the ball and said, forget about it. They tried to repeal it on the advice of Paul Ryan and others, and John McCain gave it the thumbs down. But then when it came to fix it, it's more money. Joe Biden comes in to fix it, you need more money. And now they have a holdout to try to fix it and put subsidies back into there that were there during the pandemic to fix it. So you got to put in more money. And do you realize that Barack Obama, when he passed the Affordable Care Act, he did so much damage to his party, he lost 63 seats in the House and the Senate. My goodness. You tried to fix health care. You did a terrible job. And now we've still been dealing with that legacy. By the way, he still can't build his library either. It's over $400 million.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
In their own words, ICE intended to unleash, quote, a show in the Broadview community. Without provocation and acting like jackbooted thugs, ICE has attacked and detained members of the press, including an independent journalist.
Such a clown. Governor Pritzker should be thankful because last night with the Black Hawk helicopter, they went in and took down a dilapidated hotel full of TDA members, drug trafficking, human trafficking, and just a general gang activity. He let it flourish. I don't see any cops making any arrests. 56 shot over the weekend. I don't see any outrage. It is the president that's the problem. Cut 26.
This is not about safety. This is not about immigration. This is about fomenting chaos and terrorizing the people of Chicago and cities across America. And as the mayor of the city of Chicago, we vehemently oppose and reject what this administration has promulgated against the American people.
What a clown. You have no control of your crime. You have no control of your city. You don't prosecute shoplifters or smash and grabbers, I guess if that's plural. But when someone says, I've had it, I'm taking action, they're the problem. I don't know what polls they're looking at. Julian Epstein joins us now, longtime Democrat, House Oversight Committee, great lawyer, and he has his point of view about what could be done. So, Julian, your thoughts about the position these governors and mayors are taking. Now, keep in mind, the president's also in Memphis, the number one crime city overrun with crime. That's a Republican governor, Democratic mayor. No complaints.
Yeah. Well, good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me back. I think it's the same script we've been seeing with the Democrats for the last 3 years. They can choose between catering to the activist base where they can raise money and get social media likes, or they can cater to the voters and what the voters want. And I think what you've seen on immigration, what you've seen on crime and all the cultural issues is they want the Democrats to go back to the center, but the Democrats won't go back to the center. Governors like J.D. Pritzker are interested in running for president, and they're catering to the activist base. And, the three issues that Trump is killing the Democrats on right now are crime, immigration, and the economy. And Democrats just can't find their footing. They can't find that reasonable center the way they found it a generation ago under Clinton. They can't find that center because they are driven by a reward system that is the activist left, and they're scared to stand up to the activist left, so they're taking these absurd positions. Crime in our cities, Brian, we have murder rates 30-40 murders per homicides per 100,000 citizens. In Islamabad, Pakistan, their murder rate is three murders, 3 homicides per 100,000 citizens. We are 10, 20, 30 times greater than many developing countries, developing countries where you see violence chronically. So this is just an untenable position for the Democrats. It's the same story. They won't reject the activists. They won't reject the socialists. They won't reject the extremists. They take unpopular positions, and that's why they find their approval ratings in the dumps.
So here's Pam Bondi on why she's taking action, even if Chicago doesn't want her to. Cut 24.
Here's what we're doing in Chicago first. We are sending, you've got a governor who doesn't want to help us. You've got mayors who don't want to help us. You've got woke DAs who don't want to help us. So if they're not going to help the people of their cities, we're going to help them. We're sending in FBI, of course, DEA, U.S. Marshals, ATF to back up our ICE men and women who are there following the law.
So they're going to go in there and do it. Yesterday, they took down 800 people. At what point do you think when that door's closed and they say, these guys look pretty bad, it looks like members of the Venezuelan gang, these are some of the people we had sleeping in our airports under Joe Biden, overwhelming our cities to the outrage of our taxpayers. At what point do they say this is kind of good? Or will they never say that?
Well, I think if they were smart, they would do what Muriel Bowser did in D.C., which is they will figure out that on balance, it's better to work with Trump than to try to fight him on the crime surge. I think that they probably won't do that. I think they'll continue to try to fight Trump because they think it's good for their base politics. But I think they may win the battle with their local folks, but they're losing the war. And it's the same story on immigration. It's the same story on gender. Same story on any of these issues. It's a consistent pattern of not taking the common sense approach, which would be to say to Trump, yes, we will work with you. Why don't you let us take the lead on crime? Because we know our neighborhoods the best. But we'll work together with you and the National Guard, and let's put our joint resources together, and let's try and take what is an obscene homicide rate on the south side of Chicago down to something that's much more reasonable. So they could say that, and I think they would get a lot of support certainly in the middle sector of the electorate, and certainly on the conservative side. It's a winning strategy for them, but they won't do it. And this is the dilemma you and I have spoken about in the last 2 or 3 years for the Democratic Party. They won't take the common sense approach.
They won't. I'm going to add something that somebody who is. Rahm Emanuel is going to see if he can run for president. Now, as a mayor of Chicago, he's a lot better than the last two, but he didn't get high marks. He was the chief of staff for Barack Obama, and they said he was really in control, but he was against the passage of Obamacare. He might have been right back there, ambassador to Japan, and he's a congressman that was heading to be speaker if he didn't bow out and become chief of staff, I guess, with Obama. But he wants to run somewhat in the middle, center-left. And he had an article today saying the real story should not be pronouns. It should be education. And that Democrats had a 14-point advantage on average with education over Republicans. And that reversed after the pandemic because Democrats were perceived correctly within refusing to open up the schools and kowtowing to the unions. And then they're noticing the success of Mississippi. Mississippi went from the 50th ranked state to 9 in the country in education because they reemphasized reading and phonics, and they left kids back that weren't ready. They would not push kids forward. I don't care how old they were if they were not hitting the standards, and it's working. And he's trying to say to Democrats, you want to win? This is how to do it.
Yeah, well, I think he's right. I mean, of all of the people that are thinking about running in 2028, I would associate myself closely with his views. I mean, I think he is sort of a trial balloon to candidacy. I think he's going against the grain. He's going against all the interest groups and the establishment and the groupthink of the Democratic Party. But I think he's absolutely right in his piece in today. I think it's in the Wall Street Journal today. He makes the point that the shutdowns were a disaster. And it was also a policy that the left, the mainstream media, the Democratic Party all adopted because of this sort of groupthink mentality, when there was a lot of evidence, even going back to 2020, that suggested that this may have been a mistake. But I think you know, I think what Rahm is trying to do is point out to the Democrats that if you break away from the activist base, which controls fundraising, which controls social media handles, which is sort of controls most of the canvassers and the campaign apparatus of the Democrats, if you break away from them in a sister soldier moment, the way Clinton did in 92, there is much more electoral nirvana to be had, because most of the public, 80%, 85% of the public, is not where the progressive left is and the activist space is. And that's the theory of his candidacy. It's a theory that I like. Whether he'll be successful or not, whether or not he has, you know, sort of the charisma, the appeal, the ability to generate widespread support within the party, that's another question. But I think his thesis is the right thesis.
Yeah, he's not the most charismatic guy. He doesn't have the natural gifts of Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or the presence of the celebrity power of Donald Trump. Got it. But I think people want to see people execute. That's why I think DeSantis will always have a shot, because people go, I don't like his personality. Well, he gets stuff done. You know, all he does is act efficiently. So having said that,
he's making a really good point as well that I think needs not to be overlooked. The reason that the Democrats, Brian, are in the dumps right now is because they're so negative. All they do is they say, you know, if Trump came up with a cure for cancer, they'd be against the cure for cancer.
He tried this week.
All they do is utter the words fascist and Nazi. What Rahm is talking about in Mississippi is Mississippi was, I think, 49th in the country in reading. And they went from 49th to 50th because it had a huge surge. And there's a similar story with Tennessee and similar story with Louisiana. They were far down in the dumps in terms of reading scores. They rapidly increased their reading scores because they focused on things like phonics and the new science of reading. And what Robin's making is not so much a point about education, although that's important, but it's the Democrats have to get back to building. They have to get back to solving problems rather than to calling the other side names. And if they can get back to fixing things like the disaster that is public education by using new science that we've discovered in terms of how to vastly increase reading proficiency, that's the kind of thing that the public wants to hear about. How are you building? How are you bringing us to a better future? Not about all this garbage about Republicans being Nazis and fascists.
No, I hear you. I think you're 100% right. And actually, Karl Rove wrote about it in today's Wall Street Journal, too. Can the Democrats can they run from their left? And we'll have to see. But listen to AOC, who's going attacking Schumer from the left, which push him left. Listen to her. Cut 7.
I saw some Republican members of Congress saying, oh, well, if we have this shutdown, it's because of AOC. Well, if that's the case, my office is open and you are free to walk in and negotiate with me directly.
She wants to be a leader. What do you think?
I think she represents all of these issues that are 80-20, she represents the 20, whether it's immigration, crime, you know, building this welfare state that we can no longer afford. She represents the 20% of voters that are, you know, very active in blue cities like the city where that she lives in. So I think it's a lot of demagoguery. I think it is something that is good if you're in a very, very safe district. But I think this is the recipe that's a disaster for the Democratic Party. I think there's a little bit of narcissism here. I think there's a lot of self-indulgence. I think the progressive left, you know, does things to garner attention for itself, to make itself sound like it's morally superior to the rest of us unwashed masses who don't get the, you know, how they want to reinvent society and, you know, sort of all that nonsense. And I just think it takes the Democrats to a very, very bad place. And I've been saying this, we've been talking for 2 or 3 years. I've been saying this for the last 2 or 3 years. There's others that are out there saying it. Mark Penn has been saying it. Rahm Emanuel, as you say, is saying it. There's a couple of others. John Fetterman has been saying it. And I think there's just an abundance of evidence that shows it. But the Democrats are addicted to this siren song of the activist progressive left because it's, You know, it makes them feel good about themselves. It helps them raise money. It helps them get online approval and activity and likes. But it is a place that doesn't lead the Democratic Party to anywhere good. And after the 2030 census, it's going to get worse for the party.
And lastly, just I only have 30 seconds left, but how does this lockout shutdown end?
I think the Republicans have got to make a stronger case about this welfare state. You know, these were temporary subsidies. These were COVID subsidies for the healthcare premiums. And we can't afford where we're going with Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. These programs are going bankrupt. And I think ultimately, while Trump will get a lot more leverage in terms of reforming the federal government, I think what's at stake here, which is we cannot afford this burgeoning welfare state, which has become a con game now. You know, we'll do these temporary subsidies, but then if you try to take them away in a couple of years, we're going to call you all these bad names. We have to keep growing this welfare state. We can't afford it. We don't have the money. We're a $38 trillion deficit right now, public debt. We just can't afford it. And I think Trump has got to make a much more frontal case as to why this is driving the country into bankruptcy.
All right. I'll tell you what, it's going to be an interesting few days, because I think the OMB director is going to start cutting programs if they can't get something done by tomorrow after the Jewish holiday is over. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Brian, thanks for having me again.
Julian Epstein served as chief counsel to the White House Judiciary Committee, staff director of the House Oversight Committee with the Democrats for 5 years, from 96 to 2001. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
But I just want to emphasize, this is one city block. City of Portland is about 145 square miles. This is one city block. And even the events that are happening down there do not rise to the level of attention that they are receiving. We are seeing this true for our society in whole. I'm not going to try and editorialize too much, but these, you know, 30-second, 20-second, 15-second clips that are brought in from months ago or maybe even years ago, we've seen Portland portrayed through the events of the lens of 20 and 21. And what's actually happening in the response that we're seeing both from Portlanders and from the Portland Police Bureau is not in line with that national narrative. And it is frustrating, but we're going to continue to stay the course.
Oh, really? So they're overemphasizing Portland's really great. Talk to people around there, police chief. We know that you've been hamstrung. We know you're a political appointee. And that's what you say. It's only one block and it doesn't deserve the attention it's getting. Just attack one federal building, have Antifa there every night. What's the big deal? Listen to Katie Davis-Court. This woman is a reporter and just wanted to report on Antifa's rise in the area, the damage they're doing. And she gets chased down the block and attacked. And the cops do nothing. Don't listen to me. Listen to her. And she hopped on last night with Jesse with a black eye from a pole that was put into her face by someone carrying a anti-American flag. Cut 22.
Last night, I got assaulted and I immediately ran to a Portland police officer, hunted down the suspect, chased her through the streets and said, "This is my assault suspect. Can you guys finally do something?" And I had eyes on her for about 35 minutes. Portland police refused to come in and make an arrest. And I had three officers just standing there watching me try to hunt down this suspect. And imagine my anger when I go online after doing all of that about an hour ago. And I see Portland police put out a bolo asking for the public's help in identifying my assault suspect. So that is what it's like on the ground here in Portland. And it's time for a federal crackdown.
That's a reporter. Doesn't work for us. We're reporting the chaos. These people need to be reined in. And what happens is, and we've seen this at the border, when word gets out that your craziness, your anti-American behavior, your criminal behavior will not stand, it gets to Seattle, it gets to Chicago, it gets to Philadelphia, it gets to the problematic cities and areas of Austin, Texas, and they go, okay, I don't think I really want what's happening in Memphis. I really don't want to have to deal with Blackhawks over apartment buildings for gang members. Probably not cool to do this anymore. And then the people get back to their lives. And you could take credit, local mayor, state governor, but Trump deserves the credit. He's putting up with some heat because of it.